Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. We'll cover an interesting variety of topics during today's Local Talk, starting with Reggie's Sleepout, an unusual event that brings together several local service groups to address the problem of youth homelessness in a creative way. We'll hear from the Ames Economic Development Commission, including news about Barilla and annexation. And on a completely different note, we're going to talk about compost toilets. Yes, compost toilets. So stay tuned. We're all over the place. But it's Monday, so here is the weekly weather prediction brought to you by KHOI field reporter Von Kettleson with ISU climatologist Elwin Taylor.
March 20th is the official beginning of spring, at least according to the calendar. We're talking weather here this morning with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Ellen Taylor. And we had some very nice weather here this past weekend, Ellen. And being this is the official beginning of spring, will this spring-like weather stick around for the duration as we move towards summer?
Well, indeed. And they're real fussy about when the solar beginning of spring is. And, of course, they very well could be because the sun is very predictable where it will be and when the day and the night are 12 hours and all of that sort of thing they look at. Well, of course, for us, that means that spring officially began this morning at 5:29, if I have the number in my head correct. And so nothing wrong with that. We do enjoy having spring officially here. Now, will it just behave like spring? That is the question. We do anticipate as we go through the week that we will have, tonight, a 60% chance of rain, then snow likely, in that order, with the high tomorrow, of course, being around 45, and by Wednesday morning, around 25. But don't let that discourage you. After all, it is the official beginning of spring, so we do anticipate that by the time we get to Thursday, there may still be some snow flurries around within 70% chance of some rain, but a high will be 55, and then we'll be past that little disturbance. That disturbance will likely come up from Texas way, and the 6 to 10 day outlook, still chance of precipitation, but warmer than usual, getting us right up to the 1st of April. I hope that the weather is pleasant for you.
Doesn't sound too bad at all for this time of year. Talking weather with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Ellen Taylor. I'm Von Kettleson.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for joining in to listen, and thank you to Von Kettleson and Elwin Taylor for this week's weather forecast. We have Audrey, our newest reporter, back with us again today. Welcome back to Local Talk, Audrey, for your second story. It's great to have you here. So what do you have for us?
Thanks for having me, Ursula. Today I'd like to tell you about an exciting event that anybody in the community can participate in. It's called Reggie's Sleepout, and it's happening in Ames this Saturday, March 25th at Jack Trice Stadium, and registration starts at 3 p.m. This is an event that raises much-needed awareness and funds for programs that aim to end youth homelessness. Reggie's Sleepout started in Des Moines about 10 years ago, and a group of local folks have brought it here to Ames.
You said that the event raises funds and awareness for programs that aim to end homelessness among young people. What programs are involved?
Reggie's Sleepout benefits Youth and Shelter Services, YSS, Access, the Assault Care Center Extending Shelter and Support, and ERP, the Emergency Residence Project. So it's a collaboration between the three organizations.
And these are Ames-based service agencies, but I understand that in the past, Reggie's Sleepout actually occurred in Des Moines. So who's bringing this event to Ames?
One of them is Nala Atroon. She's a senior at Ames High School. She's the co-chair on the planning committee for Ames High and serves as the liaison between Ames High School and YSS. Nala was a member of Youth Leadership, a leadership training and networking program of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Being a part of this organization led her to spearhead a group of Ames High students to get involved in the planning process for Reggie's Sleepout. I was able to sit down with her and find out more about the event.
So let's start at the beginning. Who is Reggie, and why is this event being organized in his name?
Here's Nala to tell us about Reggie Kelsey, the namesake of the event.
It started in Des Moines with a kid who was named Reggie Kelsey. He aged out of the foster care system when he was 18. He also suffered from mental, like, disabilities, and he, like, didn't have anyone. And, like I said, on his 18th birthday, he was removed from his home. And then a few weeks or months later, he was found in Des Moines River, and it was said that he... like, it was, like, suicide, or because, like, he just didn't have anyone. He had to struggle on the streets by himself. And so there are programs put in place now to help kids who have aged out of the foster system get, like, houses, jobs, go to college, like, stuff like that. And this event just helps raise money for those kind of organizations.
Andrew Allen is the CEO for YSS, and he came to talk to Youth Leadership Ames, of which you were a part of, and that's kind of how you found out about Reggie Sleepout. Was that last year?
So it was a really boring day, I would say, at YLA. We had to sit in the octagon and listen to a bunch of presentations from, like, small businesses and stuff around Ames, which was great to hear, but, like, as a junior just sitting in a chair all day in one room, it started getting really tiring. And then Andrew Allen came in, and we all decided, like, by far that was the best presentation we saw all day. And he just came in, and you could tell, like, he was really passionate about this Reggie Sleepout. He just told us the story of Reggie Kelsey. He, like, really wanted it to be a youth driven event, so he told us to contact him if we wanted to be a part of it. And so I remember thinking all in my head, like, that full day, oh, I got to get home. I got to get home and email him. So I got home. The first thing I did was email him. And I was like, hey, I wanna see what we can do with this. Like, let me know. I know a group of my friends want to do it, too. And so that's how that started. It's been a lot of planning, and it's been really fun. And it's going to be really cool to see, like, it actually happen. Like, it all felt kind of like a dream, like, doing it. But now it's, like, a reality.
What about Reggie's story that Andrew told you got you excited about taking a project like this on?
Well, it was a super tragic story. Like, I didn't actually think that something like that happened in Ames or Des Moines or Iowa even. Like, it just seemed like a kid on his birthday getting kicked out of a house just didn't seem like reality. And when he told it to us, like, I was like, wow, that is people, like, if I'm 18 and my parents kick me out, I don't have any, like, I wouldn't have anywhere to go. And, like, I would just be super scared, and I can't even think about, like, what he went through. And so that kind of just, like, kicked something in me, like, you should help other people do that. And, like, I believe, like, if you have a choice, like, a chance to help someone else, you should definitely do everything in your power to help someone. And this event will help more than just one person. It will help hundreds of people, and that'd be great, like, being able to say, like, yeah, I helped start that event, and I helped those people. Like, it'll just make my heart really happy, and I'm just really excited for that outcome.
So Reggie's story is quite a story. It's been told here by Nalia Atroon, a senior at Ames High School, who is co-chairing the planning committee for Ames High that is working with Youth and Shelter Services to plan Reggie's sleepout. Audrey Wiedemeyer is reporting. Audrey, how does a young person like Nalia get involved with such a project? It's kind of remarkable that she's gotten involved with this.
Yeah, what I find really powerful about Nala is that she's identified this opportunity to organize an event that benefits people her own age. And then over the course of the last 2 years, she's helped bring Reggie Sleepout to fruition while still being in high school.
This is a really unique, creative way to commemorate a very tragic event that happened how many years ago?
10 years ago, I think. It's a great way to, like, show kids, like, you can't really go after kids and tell them, like, this such, like, a tragic story. And, like, so this is just a way to, like, help families. Like, you also get the story, but then it's also, like, a friendly environment, and you just learn a lot more. And you also get to experience, like, what it is to be homeless, like, in a safe place.
Again, we're talking about Reggie's Sleepout, which will occur this Saturday, March 25th at Jack Trice Stadium starting at 3 p.m. The event is open to anyone who wants to participate. There are activities planned for people of all ages this Saturday, and one that sounds like a lot of fun to me because I absolutely love the idea of being challenged to a fort-building contest is the Boxed-In Contest. And Nala describes a little bit about that competition.
So people get really into it, which is really fun. It's a contest where people plan and build their structures, and then they come to Jack Trice, build them, and then we have people from around the community come around and judge them, and then if you win, you get, like, prizes, and, like, or also you get to say, I won the Boxed-In Contest, which is cool enough for me, I think, but people get really into it. Like, there was a giant Lego one time, like, Lego Man. There was a Converse shoe that was really cool. They get really big, and in Des Moines, someone, like, made, like, this igloo of triangles, and they, like, labeled their pieces, like, F1 and F5, and, like, their kids were, like, trying to get into it, too, and it was really cool to see the kids and the, like, families just kind of bond over, like, this one thing, and, like, your friends, you can bond with them over this, and it's really fun.
I think it's pretty impactful that Nala, an 18-year-old herself, is organizing so many people, so many young people to shed light on an issue of youth homelessness for people who have her own generation. So here's a little bit more of Nala.
This is kind of a fun group activity. Families and their kids, are you getting together with a group of your friends?
Yeah, a group of high schoolers will be getting together. I know there are various groups at the high school that are getting together to do this. But yeah, like just a couple of friends, even day of, if you decide to go, like there, you can come and register at the door with your friends. You have to be 18 or older if you want to come by yourself, but if you're under 18, it's an adult over 21 for every 8 youth. So, I mean, just come, bring some boxes, have a tragic little shack if you want. It's fun just to, like, you get free food there. Everything's free, and so that's really fun. So if you're bored on a Saturday night, definitely come to Reggie Sleep Out. That's something that's going to be fun.
So even though the event is free and anybody can come at 3 p.m. and register either by themselves or with a team, there is also a goal to raise $100,000 through peer-to-peer fundraising and sponsorships. The money will be used to help end youth homelessness in Story County and surrounding areas. The press release that I read said that they're expecting about 1,000 people to sleep out under the stars in Jack Trice Stadium this Saturday.
What have you learned about youth homelessness?
I would still consider myself a youth, like, 18, and so, like, 18 to 25-year-olds who are homeless, like, still need help. I've definitely learned, like, before, I was definitely living in my own bubble, like, thinking, oh, this doesn't have any names. This is, like, a New York City kind of thing. Like, people are homeless on the street. I learned, like, homelessness isn't just living on the street. It's not having a place to call home, which could mean, like, you're living at your aunt's house with your family because you, like, your family can't afford a new place, or you're couch to couch on friends' couches. Like, I always thought you had to live under a bridge to be homeless, which sounds really bad, but this whole, like, planning just really opened my eyes to see, like, there's actually a problem here in Ames, not only in Ames, but, like, in Iowa, and, like, we could actually do something to help these kids.
Well, I understand that you're going to Iowa State this fall, and being a part of organizing this event has steered you in the direction of what you want to study at the university.
Yeah, I realize, like, how much I want to give back to my community, and this really has shaped, like, what I want to do with the rest of my life. I want to be able to help families and kids, and I want people to feel safe and feel like they have a home. And so if I'm not doing it, who else is doing it? And I want to be that person that people can come to and help. That really makes me want to, like, go and study something around social work and something around families so I can just give back to the community it gave to me.
All right. So this Saturday, March 25th at Jack Trice Stadium, you can sleep under the stars. Registration starts at 3 p.m. Raise money if you want or not, and just come and participate with the expected 1,000 people. You can go to reggiesleepout.org to find out all the information. They've got a great website for you to register at and read a little bit more about Reggie Kelsey's story. I just want to thank Nala Troon for coming down to the station and chatting with me a little bit.
And I will wash in living waters, build a home on heaven's shore, live my life moment to moment, a pilgrim at compassion's door. I wandered lost and frightened, fallen down, stumble blindly, losing sight of higher ground. Always leaving here tomorrow, moving round. Oh, how weary is the traveler, I can't go on, and I will wash in living waters, build a home on the heaven's shore, live my moment, a pilgrim at compassion's door. But there's one thing I know that pulls me through. I'm not walking alone, I'm walking with you. I know you've lived my story too. Heartbreak and failure, no stranger to you. Here together, we'll take a stand. Living and dying, come take my hand, and we will wash in living waters, build a home on the heaven's shore, live our lives moment to moment, pilgrims at compassion's door, pilgrims at compassions do.
Susan Osborne, former resident of Ames, singing Compassion's Door. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I have been here with KHOI reporter Audrey Wiedemar talking about Reggie's Sleepout happening this Saturday at Jack Trice Stadium. Before letting Audrey go, I couldn't resist asking her to stay a little longer to tell you about an interesting project of her own that she's working on right now. Audrey, please describe your new home.
I live in a 2006 Mercedes Sprinter, and I've built it up to live in for the next year or so.
And what is a Sprinter?
It's a cargo van.
And you're building this into your home?
Yes, it's got a queen-size bed and a pull-out kitchen.
And why do you live in a cargo van?
It just makes sense for my lifestyle right now.
Okay. You're on the run from something?
No. No, it makes sense for the business that I'm building right now.
You are building a cycling business?
Yes.
Yes, where you organize cycling tours.
To local farms.
To local farms. Mm-hmm. So, Audrey, in this Sprinter, in this cargo van, please describe your toilet. Please excuse my bluntness on this radio show, but like all homes, you do need a toilet.
I've lived in a van before, and the one thing that I had to have in this newer van was a toilet. And so I have built a composting toilet, and what I've learned from that is there's no rushing to dig a hole or find the nearest gas station. You can just take a crap where you're at.
Well, so Audrey did actually have a teacher in building this compost toilet in her van, and the teacher was in the form of local organic farmer Joe Lynch, who also happens to be president of the KHOI Board of Directors. But right now we're interested in the fact that you taught Audrey how to build a compost toilet. Thank you for joining us. Audrey, why don't you explain exactly what is a compost toilet?
From my understanding, you could have a composting toilet where the liquids and the solids all go into one chamber, or you can have separate the liquids and the solids. And so that's what I'm doing with my composting toilet. I'm separating the poo from the pee. Pee gets tossed, throw in some sawdust with the poo, and it breaks down at a much faster rate than if you were to combine the two.
In other words, a composting toilet is a toilet that instead of putting human waste into water, it turns it into compost to be put back into the ground.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Audrey's poetry is pretty amazing, too. Anyway, the history of composting toilets is a little bit interesting. I've been using composting toilets in my house for 25 years. The early ones that were for sale, the one I bought in 1982, was from Sweden, and it was a disaster. It was some folks in Sweden started building something called a Clivus Multrum back in the 1970s. It's some thing
Clivus Multrum?
It took up the entire basement of your house. I'm not exaggerating, okay? And it didn't work very well, but it sort of composted, but you know, it was not on the grid. It was off the grid, so that was okay.
And is your toilet legal?
Absolutely. As long as I have a typical septic system that is past the county board and I'm not polluting anywhere, people are fine with it. But here's what I wanted to make a point of. The composting toilets I've used for years don't separate the urine and the poo. And depending on how often they're used and the design of the toilet, some of them work really well and some of them don't. But the current approach, all the folks like myself that have used the conventional composting toilets for years are discovering that separating the two really is the solution to all the problems that often occur when you use a composting toilet on a regular basis. The manufactured ones that you can buy, they work great for intermittent use, weekend use, cabin use, those kinds of things. But 24/7, three or four people using the same toilet, problems are built in because what happens in an old outhouse is when you dig a deep pit and don't separate the feces from the urine. And then what people did for years, they would throw lime in on top of it, and supposedly to discourage the bad bacteria. Well, that also discouraged the good bacteria. Mm-hmm. And what you have is a hole in the ground full of anaerobic bacteria that don't digest in a way that's pleasant. You can build an outhouse.
So it doesn't really compost?
Not really. No, mm-hmm. It doesn't. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What is it about the toilet you're using now that actually works in turning it into compost?
You separate the two streams of waste. And you put the solids in a compost pile out back that's protected from animal intervention and that kind of thing, and it composts on its own. People use a 55-gallon drum often, dump the solid waste into the drum when it gets full, cap it off, and let it sit for a year. A year later, it's composted, take it out and put it on your fruit trees.
It literally turns back into dirt.
Literally. Mm-hmm. And when you take the excess liquid issue away from it, you're sure there's not going to be a pollution problem. The other thing that they're actually doing on a larger scale in some places in Sweden, they're separating urine from solid material and collecting the urine and diluting it a little bit and putting it back on the farm field.
What happens with the urine in your compost?
I collect it and put it on the farm field.
This is actually a time-honored.
Yeah, absolutely, it is.
I grew up partially in Switzerland, and mm-hmm. we had an outhouse in mm-hmm. our house in the mountains there. Mm-hmm. And the farmers would periodically come and spread it on the field.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But that's...
So this is not pollution.
Well, first of all, urine is not polluting. If you collect it all in one spot, like we do in our sewage systems, and take it to the river, then it's potentially very polluting because it's fairly high, and it's not super high in nitrogen. And there's this myth that urine is very high in nitrogen. It does have some nitrogen in it, but it's not very high in nitrogen. Mm-hmm.
At the risk of pushing things a little bit, can you kind of discreetly describe what is the difference between the experience of using a regular toilet and a compost toilet? How does one notice that it's different?
I don't know what Audrey's experience is. My is that you're not flushing huge quantities of water down a drain somewhere that's been polluted with your personal feces. And it's you know, philosophically, it's quite a nice thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's toilet paper involved.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the paper?
Goes right in with everything else.
And it decomposes.
That's
with
right.
The...
You actually need carbon to go with the nitrogen in the waste. We even add ground up wood chips to go with it and to assure that there's no smell associated with it. But the beauty of the urine separation is that it takes the problem of smell away, because the smell comes when you mix the urine with feces.
That's what causes smell. So a composting toilet doesn't smell.
Well, this variety. It's all about the design of the toilet and how it operates. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been around and around on this issue with a lot of people over a lot of years trying to figure out what works best, and it's become clear to me that separating the two is the way to go.
Joe, how long have you had a compost toilet?
Well, 1982 to now.
So what got you started on it?
Initially, I wasn't excited about putting in a conventional septic system. They're expensive, and I was looking for alternatives. Think about it. The forest is full of animals that defecate all the time. The issue is concentration of it and mm-hmm. How you spread it around, what you do with it, you know.
Yeah, and so, whether you put it into water or not.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Audrey, why are you going through the trouble of making a composting toilet in your van?
It's a simple solution to finding a toilet every morning when I wake up.
Have you built the toilet?
I have built the toilet. And
so what was it like building it?
Easy.
Really?
It took a few hours to build. I ordered a part from Germany, Separate, I think is the name of the company, and it's just this plastic piece that separates the liquid and the solid, and it's got a little cap on it. It's basically like ordering a toilet seat, a special toilet seat, and then I built a box around it.
Was it fun to do it?
I mean, I like using power tools, so... Yeah.
There is one thing that helps. I assume Audrey's planning to do this in some fashion. Put a little fan to vent the box somehow to assure that you don't have a potential odor problem, although I've seen almost none associated with this particular design of toilet.
Compost toilets actually are older than modern toilets, right?
Oh, yeah.
But they haven't been part of our culture for a while. Do you see them coming back?
Well, they have certainly have their applications, you know. The only place I've ever heard anybody talk about implementing these strategies on a larger scale is in Sweden. But when you concentrate, you know, 500 people in an apartment house, you have to figure that out if you're not going to use centralized sewage systems. And it's quite a challenge. But on a one or two household basis, it's very practical. Viscerally and philosophically, they're great. You know, I mean, they've changed my view of the whole waste disposal thing significantly over the last 20 years. And again, it's the issue scale. If you're doing it on a household basis, it's very practical. Doing it on a larger basis takes a whole different set of design ideas mm-hmm. to be put into place. But I'll have to say, I literally have enjoyed it. There's been some maintenance problems that I have not enjoyed, but for the most part, it's been a very positive thing for my personal living mm-hmm. experience.
Okay, well, Audrey, I'll let you get the last word here.
Well, I'm very grateful to Joe for having done all the hard work and research over the last 25 years, because he basically just told me, this is what you need to do. He just updated his recently, so we basically have the same system. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you should go with this. This works great. And so I built that in a couple of hours, and I'm looking forward to trying it out. I haven't even tried it out yet, so maybe we can have a follow-up.
So I'm curious, what's your plan when you travel for emptying the toilet? How do you see that happening?
The urine goes into a holding tank. I have a lot of farmer friends, and I'll spread that on the farm mm-hmm. like Joe does. And then with the solids, my parents have a compost pile that's quite large. And every time I come home back to Ames, I'll put it in there every couple months.
And if somebody is interested, do you have any recommendations of where to look and avoid some of the detours that you ended up taking?
Yes. My advice would be just simply Google urine separation toilets, and you'll uh-huh. find out what you need to know.
Okay. Well, thank you. Joe Lynch is here with Audrey Wiedemeyer, and they've been telling us about composting toilets, and it seems like it kind of gets down to two things. It's you're keeping the human waste out of the water.
Yes.
And the best way to go is to separate the solids from the waste.
From the liquids.
From the liquids.
Right, right.
And that's kind of the secret to a well-functioning
yeah.
and odor-free toilet. Okay. Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Joe and Audrey, for staying and telling us about this. Let's go out with Chuck Berry.
mother told him someday you will be a man, and you will be the leader of a big old band. Many people coming from miles around to hear you play your music when the sun go down. Maybe someday your name will be in lights and Johnny B. Good tonight. Go, 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 Johnny, go. 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 Go, Johnny B. Good.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That's Chuck Berry with Go, Johnny, Go. We certainly are going to miss Chuck. He died over the weekend at the age of 90, almost inarguably the father of rock and roll. Welcome back to Local Talk. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. We've been covering a variety of issues today, but now we're going to switch gears. We've been joined by John Hall from the Ames Economic Development Commission. Welcome, John.
Good morning.
Tell us what's going on.
Well, there's a lot going on in economic development, so it's a good time to be in Ames, as we like to say. Well, recently we've seen a lot of big announcements in the industrial area here in Ames. So,
yeah. Give us some examples.
Yeah. So the Barilla project. Barilla is planning a large $60+ million expansion. Adding 41 jobs here in Ames, which is very exciting. They're going to expand their rail as well as add an additional space for a couple of lines to produce pasta as they continue expanding into the United States.
So what exactly is the expansion? Why are they expanding?
They're just seeing incredible demand in pasta. So they're
just making more pasta.
They're making more pasta. And they continue to grow into further west for the United States. So they're an Italian-based pasta manufacturer. That's where the bulk of their customers are at. And we're starting to see them continue to grow and continue to eat up market share here in the United States. And we're happy that that they've picked Ames for their very first American location. They have another location here in the United States up in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But we're happy that they picked Ames for this continued
growth. Headquarters. How long have they actually been in Ames now?
They have been in Ames
years?
Not quite that long, I don't believe. You know, I don't have the exact date. I believe it was mid-90s that they moved in.
Mid-90s? Yep. But it's gone well for them.
Yes, gone very well. They've done multiple expansions here. The most recent one was just a couple of years ago, back in 2013. We expanded and added the gluten-free line here, which was a great addition to get here in Ames as well. And they've been talking about doing this expansion for a number of years, and it finally made sense for them, finally the right time for them. And, you know, we were happy to be there along the way with them and helping them through all of the process and all the steps to actually make this happen.
Now, when they expand like that, does this create local jobs?
Yeah. So there's going to be 41 local jobs created.
So they don't bring their own people in.
Nope, they're going to be hiring additional folks. And the great thing about these 41 jobs is this is going to bring some more diversity to our market. We have a lot of very high paid, very high skilled jobs, which is fantastic. But we really don't have much diversity when it comes to jobs that people who may get a two-year degree or may not go to college at all can do and stay in Ames. So this is going to bring some diversity to our job market, which is absolutely great to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and when is this starting?
They're hoping to break ground yet this year. I believe this spring or early summer they intend to break ground. And, you know, I'm not sure what the exact build time is going to be, but probably within a year and a half.
And this means more silos out there?
Yep. They're going to have some additional silos. They're going to expand their rail yard to be able to handle a full train, to actually be able to pull it all in and unload all their grain on site.
So the rail expansion is basically their rail yard there. It's not more railroad lines.
Right. It's just into their facility. They're going to add additional space for actual production lines as well.
Now, how does the railroad work with Barilla? Do they have trains that come out of their factory and that connect with freight trains Commercial freight trains?
So the trains are actually bringing them grain. So it's going to be bringing them their raw materials. And right now they get a unit car, which is what it's called, and that's one full length of train, if you will, and they have to take the time to unload it. So they can't handle the full length of that on site right now through their just their – I believe they've got two spurs in there. Mm-hmm. So they're expanding, making them longer and adding a third spur so they'll be able to handle an entire unit car, and then they can actually unload the grain much, much quicker. So it's a huge upgrade for them from a logistics perspective, and ultimately we see that there's potential to expand that rail, those spurs, further down along the rail line and actually build in multiple uses for multiple companies.
Mm-hmm. I've always wondered this. How does a train end up at a factory like Barilla? Is it on the regular commercial line and then it just it uses the regular commercial line and then it diverges off?
Yep.
So it's not the trains that we see going through Ames. It's that are transporting across the country.
Yeah. No, this is UP Main Line right here that we sit on.
Is this a different train that goes to Barilla?
Mm-mm.
So it just on its way across the country, it stops at Barilla?
Yep. Barilla is one of the stops. So,
okay.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Okay, what else do we have?
Out in that same area, we're also working on a very large expansion of our industrial area in Ames. So right now, we really don't have much space at all for future industrial growth. So we have identified with the city area of about 1,400 acres to bring on and expand our industrial area. And that's east along Lincoln Way between Barilla and the DuPont Cellulosic Ethanol Facility and Lincoln Way Energy out in Nevada.
Now, is this zoned for industrial use?
Not currently. Uh-huh. So this has currently been agriculture. It's been in the county. But through a process where we created what's called the Ames Urban Fringe Plan through the City of Ames, we have identified this area as future industrial growth. So it's been designated that for a number of years, and that time's here. So we've been going through the annexation process, just completed the final meeting with the City Development Board. So we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and the annexation should be complete here within the next couple of weeks, which will bring on that 1,400 acres. It'll still remain agriculture zone, but now we've got the opportunity that if we have folks who are looking for industrial land, all we have to do is go through a rezoning process. We don't have to go through a full annexation and the like. The city is working on deploying the infrastructure out there, so the water and sewer lines, which will allow us to develop at a much more rapid pace for our industrial area, which once again adds to that job diversification here in our community, as well as gives us a lot of opportunity and a lot of room to grow companies that may be here, companies that aren't yet here, or supply chains up and down for companies that do exist in Ames right now. Mm-hmm. So
for kind of city management neophytes like myself, annexation is essentially a process where land technically becomes part of our town, and then that allows us to build infrastructure in that area, which can then be used by the industry when it comes in, if and when it comes in.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. And the city has obligation then when that process happens, we've got the obligation of then plowing the roads and supporting fire and police out to those areas. So there's kind of a give and take.
So Ames will get bigger.
Ames will get bigger.
It'll get bigger towards the east.
Yep, towards the east. So towards 590th Avenue, which is about halfway between Ames and Nevada. So about 5 years ago, we went through a process with the City of Nevada where we basically drew 590th as a moratorium.
This is where we are.
Exactly. This is where you guys have grown to with the DuPont facility, and this is where we envision that we're going to grow to. So we're going to go ahead and lock that in, that nobody can grow past that line. So Nevada.
So we're not going to swallow up Nevada.
No. they took their big bite out to get out to there, and now it's our turn to get that land secured and ready for development. So
590th, is that right up to where the DuPont plant is?
Yep, that's going to be right up to the DuPont facility.
So I can kind of picture that.
Yep.
So it is literally about halfway to Nevada.
Yeah, Yeah.
So we're just getting a lot bigger.
Yeah. It's going to add a lot bigger. It's going to add a lot of land, mm-hmm. a lot of land mass to the community. The tax base for that ag land is going to be enough to offset any services that the city will need to provide in the terms of fire and police. But then when we really start seeing that growth out there, that industrial mm-hmm. growth, we really believe that this is going to be a very competitive area. You know, mm-hmm. we've got the UP Main Line Railroad, which we've already talked about. There's a large natural gas facility out there. There's a lot of good, mostly flat land, which bodes well for industrial development. Don't have to bring in a lot of fill dirt or move the mm-hmm. earth too much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's between a Barilla manufacturing facility and two ethanol facilities. So there's a lot of opportunity for utilizing like the waste streams from the ethanol facilities. They've got a lot of product that they – once they're done with the product,
mm-hmm.
there's other companies that can take those products and then mm-hmm. spin out other bio-based mm-hmm. products. So
is there – do you have any company in the wing – looking to build in that area?
We've had some conversations with some companies. I know that some of the facilities out there have had conversations with other companies that want to utilize their waste streams. Up until this point, it's really been about waiting for the land to come into the city and, mm-hmm. and completing that process. And then once the DuPont cellulosic ethanol facility is actually up and running as well, that'll be a big step in that. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of two hinges we're waiting on. The first one we expect to be completed in the next couple of weeks. But we've had a lot of kind of tentative or tire-kicking conversations up to this mm-hmm. point. I mean, we really see that there's going to be potential out there. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I'm speaking with John Hall from the Ames Economic Development Commission. John, we're running out of time real fast. Any other important updates in the economic area?
And as far as important updates go, I mean, downtown is one of the big ones that we've been working on. And we took on a mission to try and bring fiber optics downtown. And I know that it's been going around lately that Mediacom has decided to put in fiber optic internet to serve the downtown businesses, which is, we see, a huge win. So we put pressure on the city council publicly about a month and a half ago to deploy or allow the deployment of fiber optic internet in whatever way could be done most feasibly. And we were looking at exploring the use of the city's electric vaults to do that. Mediacom was able to approve a very large capital expense to actually do this as a company, which we think is an absolute fantastic win whenever we can expand services, especially to the downtown, which we continue to see is a place where people want to live and work. More and more companies, especially technology-based companies that may be smaller in size, want to be down here, want to have their offices down here, but really there's been a barrier that they haven't been able to. So hopefully with the deployment of this infrastructure, we can mm-hmm. change that dynamic and start to see even more development happen downtown.
Yeah, that's good news for us too. Our stream here at the station
absolutely.
Depends on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, John, please come back soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like we just kind of scratched the surface, but the clock is running out. So thank you, and come back again soon.
Absolutely.
And let's talk some
more.
Happy
to do it.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Earlier in the show, we heard from KHOI reporter Audrey Wiedemeyer about Reggie Sleepout and an interview featuring Nalia Atroon. Audrey also explained the making and meaning of compost toilets along with the help of Ames local organic farmer Joe Lynch. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. We also heard Compassion's Door by Susan Osborne and Johnny Be Good by the late, great Chuck Berry. Remember that Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org, so if there's anything you want to go back to hear again, you can find it there, khoifm.org. We're also streaming live at that location. There you can also find information and links about what we spoke about today. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., and you can listen to it online as well. And it is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. And so you can come and join the Local Talk team. And thanks to Audrey Wiedemeyer for jumping into the water and doing her second report. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. And we'll go out today with the music of Chuck Berry, who died this weekend at the age of 90. Charles Edward Anderson, or Chuck Berry, was born in 1926, and he was one of the greatest American guitarists, singers, and songwriters, and considered a founding pioneer of rock and roll music with songs such as Maybelline, Roll Over Beethoven, Rock and Roll Music, and Johnny B. Goode. Berry refined and developed rhythm and blues into the major elements that made rock and roll distinctive, writing lyrics that focused on teen life and consumerism, and developing a music style that included guitar solos and showmanship. Berry was a major influence on rock and roll music.
They're really rocking in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA, deep in the heart of Texas and round the Frisco Bay, all over St. Louis and down in New Orleans. Just got to have about a half a million, a famed autograph. Her wallet filled with pictures, she gets them one by one. Become so excited, watch her look at her run, boy. Oh, mommy, mommy, please may I go? It's such a sight to see, somebody steal the show. Whisper to mommy, it's all right with you. 'Cause they'll be rocking on Bandstand in Philadelphia, PA, deep in the heart of Texas, around the Frisco Bay, all over St. Louis, way down in New Orleans. All the cats wanna dance with sweet little 16. She's got the grown-up blues, tight dresses and lipstick, she's sporting high-heeled shoes. Oh, but tomorrow morning, she'll have to change her trend and be sweet 16 and back in class again. But they'll be rocking in Boston, Pittsburgh, PA, deep in the heart of Texas, and round the Frisco Bay. Rockin', we was reelin' and rockin', rollin' till the break of dawn.
my watch, it was 9:32. There's nothing I'd rather do than dance with you. Reeling and rocking, we was reeling and rocking way till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch, it was 9:43, and every time I spin, she spin with me. Reeling and rocking, we was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch, it was 9:54. I said, dance, ballerina, go, 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 go. Reeling and rocking, we was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch, it was 10:05. Man, I didn't know whether I was dead or alive, and I was old. Reeling and rocking, we was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch, it was 10:26, but I'ma keep on dancing till the guitar kicks. It was 10:28. I gotta get my cake before it get too late. Reeling, reeling and rocking. We was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch. It was 10:29. I had to hold her hand. She is still holding mine. Reeling and rocking. Well, I looked at my watch, and to my surprise, I was dancing with a woman that was twice my size. I was reeling and rocking. I was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn. Well, I looked at my watch, and it was time to go. The band leader said, we ain't playing no more. Reeling and rocking.